Good morning, everybody. Boker Tov. Welcome. Thank you for dodging the raindrops to get here. Some of them were more than just drops. Baruch Hashem, Gishmei Bracha. We're very pleased it's raining, but it's nevertheless sometimes makes it difficult to get in. I've been away for a few weeks. You probably realize that. There aren't that many more trips planned away. I will be away a couple of times over the next month and a half, but then that's it till the summer. I won't be away for long, just 1 week at a time, and please God, through to the summer we should have a clear run. Summer feels like a long time away, but it'll come along. We're on Shir 67 in this series, and who knows how long it will go on. But there is a little bit of unfinished business, because for anyone who was in the Shir almost exactly 2 years ago, they may or may not remember that we started a topic which we never really got to finish. I doubt that anyone really is remembering that specifically. But we started talking, and we need to today pick that up and talk properly. I apologize, by the way, for my voice. I brought back something of a cold from snowy Cleveland. So I brought something back from Chutzlaritz. So hopefully it'll go back there soon. We started talking two years ago about a very, very fascinating mitzvah. A mitzvah called Lipnei Ida Loisiten Michshol, which is not to put a stumbling block in front of a blind person. And we talked about what that mitzvah meant and what are the contemporary applications of that mitzvah. And I want to pick that up with a shiur this week and then part two next week, dealing with many of these issues. But first let me whet your appetite for some of the issues that this deals with and some of the issues that we have to pick up. Look on page one. I brought you 33, and there are many more, but I brought you 33 modern applications where this mitzvah kicks in, people may or may not have thought about. We're not going to answer all of these questions either today or next week, but we're going to answer many of them and deal with many of the cases. Let's start with some which are Shabbos related. Are you allowed to invite people who will drive on Shabbat to attend a Shabbaton, an educational Shabbat, or to attend your family simcha? Is that okay? You're encouraging them, inviting them to drive on Shabbos. You know they're going to drive on Shabbos. Is that a problem? What about just giving directions to a Jewish driver on Shabbat? This has happened to me a couple of times walking in England. Doesn't happen very much in Yerushalayim, but walking through London once, a lady stopped the car. It was about 9 o'clock in the morning. I was walking to shul. There was no question where this woman was going. She was all dressed up with a big hat on and a big, you know, flower in her hair. There's no one dressed like that on Golders Green Road on 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning except people going to shul. And she asked for directions to where the Reform Shul is in Ailes Gardens. Okay? So what's the halacha there? What about, this can happen and does happen in Israel, making Jewish drivers stop on Shabbat so you can cross the road. You're standing by the side of the road in Tel Aviv, whatever, on Shabbat afternoon, and some Jewish driver comes to stop so you can cross the road. You've just made them be Mechal Shabbos by stopping the car. Is that your problem or not? Handing over a job, printing work, whatever, to someone who will do it on Shabbat, a Jewish worker. What about giving a bar mitzvah gift in a place where there's no Eruv and you know people are going to carry it home? Hiring a babysitter or a madrich where you're going to pay them on Shabbos. Often babysitters get hired on Shabbos for an hour's work or 2 hours work or a madrich for a program. They're not allowed to earn money on Shabbat for that specific work. Have you got a problem hiring them? Other things away from Shabbat. Printing source sheets. If you put Shem Hashem on the source sheets and you know people are going to throw them in the garbage because that's what happens to source sheets. I go to all sorts of shuls and see old source sheets of mine lying from 6 months, a year, 2 years, still drifting around in the outskirts of the shul. Something completely different, buying cigarettes for a parent or a friend. Students sometimes ask me this, my parents smoke, they say, am I allowed to buy them cigarettes? They send me to the shops to buy them cigarettes. Paying a worker who you think isn't paying taxes. Tell me you've never had this one. It's fine, just pay me cash. It'll be a bit cheaper. Oh, that's interesting. Why is that then? Okay, well, we don't go into that. Is that your problem? A rabbi officiating at a wedding where the couple will not keep Taras HaMishpacha. Is the rabbi giving a shtempel, is giving a hechsher, if you like, to a wedding where there is a major problem halachically with how the relationship will be conducted? Renting out a hall, a catering hall for a function where they're going to have mixed dancing or non-kosher catering. Is that your, bless you? Is that your, you see, I've already given someone a cold, I apologize. selling meat to Jews during the 9 days, selling meat which is not kosher to non-religious Jews. Let's say you work in a supermarket, and you're just on the checkout, yeah? And a Jewish person comes with a leg of ham, you know, whatever, and comes through, and you want you to put it through. Do you have a halachic issue? So should you be saying, I'm sorry, I can't help you buy this meat? It's not allowed. Or should you just be, you'll probably lose your job afterwards, but is that a relevant factor? We'll see. Selling clothes with shatners to non-religious Jews. What about giving food, serving food to people who will not make a bracha, who will not bench, who will not wash? Is that a problem? On the one hand, how can you not serve them food? How can you invite them to your house and not give? On the other hand, how can you give them a bread roll and watch them just eat it without doing anything beforehand? Getting a non-kosher lunch for a non-religious boss, this has happened to many people. When I was a junior, this was a big issue. Your Jewish boss asks you, run down the road, please, and pick up a sandwich for me. I'll have a shrimp sandwich with whatever it is. And what are you going to do? I mean, he's given you some money, and he's sending you to buy him lunch. You're going to say, I'm sorry, I can't buy you that. I'll have to go to some kosher restaurant and buy you salt beef and whatever it is. He's not interested in salt beef. He wants you to get in the sandwich. What about letting someone else copy your homework so that they can cheat? Okay? And get better marks in a test. Selling clothes which are not sanua, or giving them away. I have this shaila from a number of my students, young women who have become more observant, and they have a lot of clothes in the cupboard, and they say, chaval, it's a shame, you know, I'm going to just throw them in the garbage. I'll give them to friends. They don't mind. They'll wear them. So is that their problem? Are they allowed to do that? Smacking a child, where the child may hit back at the parent. We'll look at that today and see how that works. Giving a bribe to an official, okay? I'm sure no one here has ever done that, but that is done, as you may have heard about. What about renting an apartment to someone who won't put up mezuzahs? A Jewish family, they won't put up any mezuzahs. You're the landlord. Is that your problem or not? Teaching Torah or selling Torah books to non-Jewish people. You're not meant to teach Torah to non-Jewish people. How far does that go? Is that your responsibility? Encouraging a shidduch without giving all pertinent information. Selling alcohol to underage children or to people who are not able to deal with the alcohol. What about acting? This was the one that applied to me when I used to be a lawyer. Acting as a lawyer for a Jew who is suing another Jew in a non-Jewish court. He doesn't care. He says, I'll take him to, I'm not going to the Beis Din. It's, you know, I'm not messing around. I'll go straight to the non-Jewish court. Do you as a lawyer have an issue with that? Or, by the way, I didn't put this down, but acting as a lawyer for Jews who are lending money on interest to each other, drawing up a contract, etc. for that, that's a relevant factor as well. What about acting as a mole for a child who is not actually halachically Jewish? This is a very interesting question. Sometimes the child has a mother with a slightly questionable or maybe even very questionable conversion, and the father's Jewish and the mother is Suffolk Jewish, and the question is, the mole's called to do a bris, is he allowed to do a bris, or does that give the impression that the baby is actually halakhically Jewish? An Israeli army officer instructing a non-religious soldier to shave. This is a very common one. Okay, so soldiers have to be clean-shaven. So the Israeli officer, let's say, is religious, and he tells the young boy, you can't come out like that, go ahead and go inside and shave. And he knows he's going to shave with a razor. But you're not allowed to shave with a razor. So is that the Israeli officer's, the army officer's, the religious officer's responsibility? What about a religious soldier switching Shabbos duty with somebody who doesn't keep Shabbos? This is a common shaila for the religious boys in the army. They're given something to do on Shabbat, and they speak to a non-religious soldier colleague. Yeah, let's switch. Are you allowed to do that? Because he's going to break Shabbos. If you do it, you're not going to break Shabbos other than as halakhically necessary. But if he does it, he's not going to care, and he's not going to know. Performing a burial on second day Yom Tov, which we used to do in Chutz La'aretz, but no longer do for reasons we'll see of Lifnei Iver. Taking an animal to the vet to be neutered. Selling weapons to potential murderers, hopefully not something anyone in this room is involved in. What about acting as an anesthesiologist for an abortion when you feel that that's halakhically prohibited? Can you help with the operation? Or even a pharmacist dispensing pills which will induce an abortion? You're approached as a pharmacist for those pills, and are you allowed to do it? You can see there are many, 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 many modern-day contemporary applications in the halakhic world on this issue, and they all of these have in common that they deal with the question of lifnei iver lo yisitin nechshol. So what I want to do is, today, Be'ezrat Hashem, I want to go through with you the parameters, halachically, of lifnei iver, so that we get clarity. It's quite a complicated sugi, it's quite a complicated limud to go through it, but it's very important. And next week, when you're armed with all this week's knowledge, with understanding as to how the Gemara works and how all the Rishonim works, we'll be able to put those details, those halachic, if you like, frameworks into these questions and have a look at some really fascinating modern-day tshuvas, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Avad Yosef, other people that deal with these type of questions, and we'll see how they're answered, and hopefully that will give us some insight, because I'm sure many of these situations come up, not all of them obviously, but in people's lives. So let's have a look at it together. Okay, number one. The Pasuk says, Loi sekalel cheresh. Do not curse the deaf. Okay, we're not getting into that right now. Why is it dafka the deaf? The deaf don't hear, so why will they mind? They won't know, but you still can't curse the deaf. V'lifnei iva loi siten michshol v'yareisa melokecha ani Hashem. Do not put a stumbling block before a blind person, and fear God, because I am God, says God. What does it mean, do not put a stumbling block, a block, in front of a blind person? Maybe it means, don't take a concrete block. See a blind person coming with a stick down the road, don't put a concrete block in front of them so they'll fall over the block. I mean, obviously you shouldn't do that, but is that what the Pasuk is talking about? So Rashi, if you go over to page 2, Rashi brings a very different explanation. He quotes Chazal, and he says, no, we're not talking about concrete blocks and blind people, we're talking about something else. Number 2, Lifnei Hasuma V'Davar. Someone who is blind on an issue. They're blind to an issue. Lo Titen Eitza. Don't give them an advice or assistance. She'ein Hogenet Lo, which is not suitable for them. For example, Al Toimar, don't say, Mechor Sadcha, sell your field, V'kach Lecha Chamor, and buy donkeys. Meaning you give someone business advice. Now is the time to be selling real estate and buying donkeys. The donkey market is going to go through the roof. The ata okefala, but really your agenda is, you want to go round, if you like, and say, v'notlehemani, you want to get hold of the field. Really, you're advising him to sell the field because you have your own personal agenda, and it's not advice in his best interest. It's not good advice. You're trying to get hold of the field. That's why you tell him to sell the field and buy a donkey. This is a very interesting shaila. I've just been recruiting. Okay? So giving advice is something that you do. People come to you, students. These poor 17-year-old girls, they're really clueless. There are about 50 different seminaries, and they really don't know what they are. And they really, it's very frustrating. In Israel, when my son was in 12th grade, or in Israel, so they have, I'm sure if you have kids in the system, they have these things called shvushim, where they try out. They spend a week in this yeshiva, and a week in that yeshiva, and a week in this yeshiva, and then they can get a proper understanding. These girls sitting in New York, in Cleveland, wherever, they're really standing in the dark. So of course, I'm representing an institution. I am there to try and promote the institution that I'm the director of. So I stand up and I give my pitch. And then it's very common that a girl comes up to me afterwards and says, okay, that's very nice, I like the sound of your institution, but you know me, some of these girls I know, I taught their sisters. Tell me, for me, what should I do? Should I go to your place, or should I go to this other place that you used to work in, that you no longer represent, that's your direct competitor, da-da-da-da-da? Lifnei iva lo titen michshol is a big question, meaning I have to kind of take off my institutional hat and say, okay, I'm no longer advising you as the director of X. You're asking me a personal question. I have to give you advice, which is right for you, even if it's not right for me. This is something that comes up in many situations. So Rashi says that is the pshat in the pasuk. The Minchas Chinuch even goes so far as to say, number 3, Nira, it seems, turns out, it appears, the pasuk zeh, the lifnei iva, yasala gamri dichita. This pasuk has completely departed from its apparent pshat. De'im notam michshol, that if you actually do take a concrete block, mamash, a real concrete block. Mamash ever, if you put a real concrete block in front of a blind person, ain't either, you're not doing this aveira. Now, of course, before you get any ideas, you're not allowed to put a concrete block in front of a blind person. There are any number of other aveiras that you are doing, loisat in damim balizecha, I put in the footnote there. But it seems that it's not this one. This particular mitzvah is not dealing with actual concrete blocks. And one of the clues to that is Rashi's comment on the end of the pasuk. Looking number 4, the Yireisa Elokecha. Why does it say fear God? So Rashi gives us a very important clue. Levisha Adava Azeh Einu Masur Lebriot. People who are watching you won't know. Later, they won't understand. Im Das Hashel Zeh Letova O Lera'a. If you're giving advice, they won't know whether you're giving good advice or bad advice. If I say to this young lady, yes, you must come to my institution, and later it turns out to be a disaster. No, people will say, well, I don't know, maybe this didn't work out. I don't know whether he was giving good advice or bad advice. For Yochel Yishamed, a person could always excuse himself later and say, L'tayva nitkavanti, I had the best interest in mind of this person. L'tikach nema bo, that's why it says, V'yareitam elokecha. Fear God, hamakim achshvotecha, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what we're thinking. So to anything which is in a person's mind, when they're doing something, other people will not know whether you're intending for good or for bad. Rashi gives an interesting cloud. Why does it say fear God after certain mitzvot? Says Rashi, these are mitzvot when people who are looking at you will not know if you had good intentions or bad intentions. So you have to realize, says the Pasuk, that even though you might be able to fool the public, you can't fool Hashem, and He knows what's in your head. So obviously, somebody who puts a concrete block in front of a blind person, is there any doubt whether there are good intentions or bad? What could possibly be the good intentions of somebody doing that? So it's not talking about that. It's talking about something much more subtle, which is this issue of giving bad advice. And Rashi brings this and all the other the Mephoshim as well, based on the Gemara. Actually, it's a Sifra, a Teres Kohen, in which we're going to see right now. Because Chazal fleshed this out as follows in number 5. Lifnei Eva Loititim Mikshol. Lifnei Suma Badavar. You see Rashi got from here. Okay? Baba Amalacha, he comes and says to you, Bat Ish Ploini Mahi. Here we are with the Shiduchim. This particular girl, Mahi Lekohuna, can she marry a Kohen? Al Tomalok Sheira. Don't say she's okay to marry a Kohen, but he Eva El Absurda, but really it's not good. Hayanoitel Milcha Eisa. Someone comes to you for advice. Al Titen Loi Eisa She'eno Genisla. Don't give them bad advice. Al Tom Alot Seba Hashkama. Don't say get up early in the morning. Shekifu Listim and they'll only get attacked by bandits. Seba Tarayim, go out in midday, Bishvil Shitit Arishitit, Shish Tarev, and they will end up getting overheated and dehydrated. Don't give them bad advice. Al Tom Alot Macharet Sadcha Vakachla Chamor, this is the example Rashi gave. Don't say buy a donkey, sell your field and buy a donkey, etc., etc. Rather, give them good advice and know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows your advice. Fine. That is the mitzvah. The mitzvah d'oraisa is to give people advice which is appropriate for them. The Rambam, when he takes this mitzvah, he actually extends it to apply to the cases that we are now dealing with. Look in the Rambam's application in Sefer HaMitzvah number 6. The Rambam says the following. The HaMitzvah HaReish Tzaditet, he, Sheziranu Mehachshil Ketzatenu Et Ketzatenu. We are warned not to trip up other people, the Eitza, with advice. He says, absolutely, it's about advice. If somebody asks you for advice, and you might have a temptation to give a bad answer, it comes along this mitzvah and tells you not to trick them or to mislead them. Give them clear, straight advice. Tell them to do something which you feel is the right thing for them. Fine. That we know. But then the Rambam goes further and says, they also said that this negative mitzvah is, if you ever help somebody else to do an aveira, to do something which is not halakhically permitted, or you give them the circumstances. Kihu yaviha ish hahu. You're bringing this person. Why are they blind? They're blind because the Yetzahara has blinded them and told them they should do this. And now you're helping them. You are now giving them the opportunity to complete or fulfill that Aveira. Or yachin loy sibat ha'avera, or you're giving them the circumstances in which the avera can be done. Umi'elu apanim amru, for these reasons, Chazal said, we'll see this soon, if you lend money on interest, or borrow money on interest, not only are you doing the avera of lending on interest to a Jew, or borrowing on interest from a Jew, but you're also, if you're the lender, you're causing the borrower to borrow on interest, which is lifnei iver, and if you're the borrower, you're causing the lender to lend on interest, which is lifnei iver. So you're not only doing the avera yourself, but you're getting the other person to do the avera as well. And then the Rambam says, udvarim rabim ma'oid mizeh hamin yomru behem oiv mishum lifnei iver. He says this is so common in everyday life, people don't even realize. Dvarim rabim ma'oid. Says, and we saw 33 cases, and there are many, many more. Says, be well aware of this mitzvah, because it comes up in everyday life, helping other people to do aveiras. And then he says at the end, but the pshat in the posuk is the issue of advice. It's not the concrete block, we've established that. But the Rambam, the Rambam has said here, there are many, many applications of lifnei iver. of helping people in different ways to do Averas.
Fine.
So let's see if we can put some parameters to this. In what ways are we not allowed to enable people to do Averas? So let's have a look at the way that the Gemara defines this. Here we have an example in the Gemara number 7. The Tanya, Litzayiv Aloitit HaMichshol, said the Gemara in Moed Katan, the Makel Ibnai Godel HaKosav Medaber. This is talking about someone who hits their child when he's old enough to potentially hit back. Now, hitting a child may or may not be halakhically allowed. I'm not getting into the whole issue of smacking children, whether it's wrong, whether it's right, whether it's effective, whether it's abusive. I'm not getting into that whole debate. But one thing is for sure, hitting a parent is definitely not right. Okay? And a child who hits their parent and bruises their parent actually is a capital offense. And therefore, says the Gemara, if you hit the child at an age where the child may lash back, you're doing an Avera. The child hit you. But you're causing that. You're making that happen. You should have realized that this child is now old enough. By the way, the Gemara asks, how old would a child have to be chutz pedik enough to hit the parent back? And it says like 22, 24, etc., etc. We're not talking about a toddler. If a toddler who lashes out, that child is not liable for anything. But the Gemara says, hitting a child could be an isser of litnei iver if a child will hit back. So too, it brings the example of lending money. Go to the top of page 3. Says the Mishnah, Elo Ovri Velo Sasa, in the issue of lending money, this is Gemara in Bava Metzia, the following people are breaking the halacha. Hamalva, the lender, the haloiva, and the borrower, Ha'orev, who is the orev? The guarantor, because without the guarantor, the lender will not lend the money, and therefore the guarantor is facilitating the prohibition. The ha'edim. And the witnesses, they're all doing averas. What are they also? Well, what's the avera of the edim, of the guarantor? They're not lending or borrowing. Chachamim arim af ha-sofer. The rabbi said, even the sofer. Who is the sofer? In modern day times, the sofer are the professional advisors, the lawyers, the accountants, etc. They're all breaking mitzvah d'oraisa. Why are they doing, what averas are they doing? So the Gemara gives a whole list, and at the end of that list is, litnei iver lo yisitiv nichshol. And as I said before, as a lawyer, this was a shaila, this is a shaila. You have a Jewish client who wants to lend money to another Jewish client, and they're not religious, and they're not interested about the questions of ribbit, of lending on interest, they're not bothered by that. Can you as a lawyer do that or not? And as we go through the sheet, we'll see what the parameters are as to whether you can or you can't. So clearly this is discussed in the Gemara in a number of different cases. But there are limitations. For example, look at number 9. In Avodah Zorah, actually this is Gemara Nedarim, but it's about Avodah Zorah. Rav Ashi Havaleihahu Abba. Rav Ashi had an Abba. An Abba here means a forest. He had wood that he used to sell to people. Zavne Lebnei Nura. And he sold it to a group of people who used the wood for Avodah Zorah. There were certain Avodah Zorah rites that involved burning the wood, and he sold it to them as well. Amalei Ravina. So Ravina took him to task. The Rav Ashi, and he said, what happened to loy litnei iver? And you see, by the way, from here, we'll see clearly as well later, litnei iver applies to helping non-Jewish people as well to do averas. Meaning, it's a mitzvah on the Jew not to allow any other person to do an avera, not to enable that and facilitate that. So if it's a Jew, then it's a Jewish avera, if you like. If it's a non-Jew, then avodah zorah, murder, any of the sheva mitzvahs b'nei noach, a Jew is not allowed to encourage or facilitate a non-Jew to do that avera. So Ravina takes him to task. How can you sell wood to these people? So Amalei, so he replies, Rav Eitzim lahasaka nitnim. Most wood that I sell is used for hasaka. What's hasaka? Heating. Meaning, I don't know what they're using it for. 9 out of 10 times, whatever it is, 7 out of 10 times, people come to me, they buy wood, it's for the heat of the house. Every now and then somebody buys wood and they're going to use it for some kind of avodah zarah. Like, that's a minority of cases. So clearly the Gemara seems to say that you're not obligated in every case to find exactly what's being done here. If there is a reasonable explanation why it won't be used for an avera, maybe that's okay. That's a limitation. A second limitation, number 10. Levona. What's levona? It's a spice, like a frankincense. Okay, levona. Can you sell frankincense to non-Jews who do avodah zarah? So it says, moichrim len chavila. You can sell it in bundles. You can sell it wholesale. If you ever know why Jews are in wholesale, it's Gemara. Because frankincense, you can be in the wholesale market. Says the Gemara of the Leichush, maybe you should be worried. Dilma Azilumad bin Achrinu Makatre. Maybe this the person you sold it to, the retailer, will then sell it on for Avodah Zarah, and you are up the chain facilitating Avodah Zarah. Amar Abaya, Abaya says no. Alif name of Akdina. We are commanded not to put a block in front of a blind person. Alifne, de lifne, two stages beyond the actual event. We're not worried about that. So again, you see the Gemara limits this a little bit and says, yes, if that's directly in front of you, if it's going to happen now, maybe that's your problem. But if something's going to happen down the line and there are many other factors between you and that happening, let's say, look at the case, for example, of a rav at a wedding, where he's officiating at a wedding, and I said the couple will not be keeping Tarat HaMishpacha. Now, when is the Avera happening? It's not like someone giving food to someone who's about to put it in their mouth. If an Avera happens, it happens down the line, it happens later, and there's all sorts of other factors in between. Maybe that's not such an issue, and maybe that's not something that we're as concerned about, Lifnei de Lifnei. But the most important limitation of all comes right now. And the Gemara here is a little bit complicated. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah raises the following question. If you recall, this time last year we had a number of shirim about Chukat HaGoy. It's Thanksgiving, as you probably worked out this week, if you're in the Thanksgiving mode. We talked about Thanksgiving and Chukat HaGoy, then we talked about Christmas. We had a whole bunch of shirim on churches and all that kind of stuff. So one of the things we mentioned then is that the Gemara says you're not allowed to sell an animal to an idolater 3 days before their festival of idolatry. Because why? He doesn't say. He says you're not allowed to sell the animal to this idolater within 3 days of their special idolatry festival. So says the Gemara number 11. Iboilehu. The following question was asked. Mishum harvacha or dilma mishum lifnei yedah. Why are you not allowed to sell the animal? Is it because of harvacha? Harvacha means that the non-Jew has made a profit. He's done a good deal. He will go to his Avodah Zarah, to his idol, and he will say, Baruch Hashem, or whatever he says, Baruch, whatever he says. Thank God that, or thank this idol that I managed to do a great deal. I bought a sheep from a Jew, I got a good price. You don't want him thanking his idol for the deal that you did. Is that the reason? Or maybe it's because of Lifnei Iver, that you are enabling him to do Avodah Zarah with this animal you just sold him. So the Gemara asks, who cares? Why? It's also either way. L'mayna kamina. Why do I care? Why it's also? It's also, so it's also. So with this reason, that reason, it doesn't matter. So he says, yes, there is a nas kamina. The itle behemoth day. If he already has an animal at home that he could have used for the Avodah Zarah, and you giving him another animal doesn't actually facilitate that Avodah Zarah. E amra mishum harvacha, if you say that the prohibition is because if he made a good deal, he'll thank his idol. So who cares if he has one at home? Every deal he makes is another good deal. He'll thank his idol. Hakamer bachla, he's making a profit. But if you say the issue is you're enabling him to do Avodah Zarah, he can do Avodah Zarah without you. You are not the one that gave him the ability to do Avodah Zarah. He had an animal already at home. So the Gemara now says, really? If he could do the Avera without you, does that get you off the hook? So Gemara asks, if he really has one at home, are you then in the clear? The Gemara brings the case of the famous case of the Nazir. The Hatanya, don't we have an example? Amar Ibn Nazir, Minay Shalo Yoshid Adam Koshel Yayim the Nazir. There's a Nazir. Now, as you know, a Nazir, a man or a woman, a Nazira, is not allowed to drink wine. So if you give a Nazir a glass of wine, anyone for a Chardonnay, and there's a Nazir sitting there, you're not allowed to do that. The Abim Nachayla Bnei Noach, or a limb from a live animal to a non-Jew, how do we know you're not allowed to give it? Talmud Loma Lifnei Iver Lo Yitin Mechshol. Lifnei Iver. The Hahacha Diki Lo Yavino Le Shakri Iyu Ka'av Mishum Lifnei Iver Lo Yitin Mechshol. And the Gemara says, 1 second, are you telling me this Nazir has no other source of wine? Maybe the Nazir has his own wine, or her own wine. Maybe they can go to the wine shop and buy some wine. It still appears that you can't give them wine. And the Gemara says no. And this is the key point here. Hach Gemara, what are we dealing with here? The Kai betray Ibranara. You're on two sides of the river. Now this is a concept which is very important. Two sides of the river is a kind of construct where it's giving the following example. Let's imagine the Nazir was stranded on one side of the river, saying, I need wine. He probably does need a glass of wine if he's stranded on the side of the river, but okay, I need a glass of wine. And you are the only source of the wine, because he can't get the wine anywhere else. He's stranded. And you hand him a glass of wine over the other side of the river, So that's when you're doing the Isra of Lifnei Iver. But appears to say that the Gemara, if you're not in that scenario, meaning if they could get the wine somewhere else, then that's not your problem. There's no Lifnei Iver. Rashi explains, Ovid Kochavim Mitzadzeh, the non-Jew or the Nazir is on one side, but Yisra Mitzadzeh, the Eloi Yaimlei, if he can't get it, Loi Mati Shakel, he won't get it without you. This is very, very important because you can already see how it's going to feed into all of the situations that we raised at the beginning. If I'm promoting someone else or facilitating someone else to do an Aveira, if they could do it without me, then maybe that's not my problem anymore. Let's think of some of the cases. I'm sitting at the checkout in the supermarket and they're coming, and Mrs. Cohen's coming through with her leg of ham. Okay? So I'm not going to serve her. I'm going to say, I'm not putting it through because this, you're Jewish and you're not allowed to eat ham. So what's she going to do if I don't put it through? She'll go to Christine on the next, thing, and she'll put it through there? Like, what am I achieving? She'll do it anyway. So maybe it's not my problem. If she, anyway she could get it, maybe that's not called Lifnei Iver anymore. And then, of course, raises the question, which is, how easy does it need to be for them to get it somewhere else? Is it if they already have it right there? Is it if they could theoretically get hold of one? And that's already a debate which is beyond the scope of this year. I can't get into, but I brought you some notes to different people who say that have different, if you like, scales as to how easy it has to be for them to get. Yes. Excuse me, sorry? This is Doraisa. Everything here is Doraisa so far. And by the way, it may be even Doraisa to help them to do a rabbinic Aveira. Because it's even a Doraisa prohibition to give them bad advice. Buy a field, or sell a field, or buy a donkey. So why do I care if I'm helping them do a Doraisa or a Drabonon? It's either way I'm helping them do something wrong. So that's going to be an Isra Min HaTorah if they have no other ability to get that themselves. And that's very important. Perhaps the most important thing we've said in terms of the halacha in this year so far is if they have no other ability to get the Aveira, then you are doing the Aveira by giving it to them. But if they do, then maybe you're off the hook. And we'll have to plug that into the examples that we gave before. Now, let's take it one stage further. There is another level. Now, you just asked the question, is this Doraisa or is this Rabbanan? And I answer, this is on a Torah level. Lifnei Iver applies on a Torah level. But maybe there is another level. Have a look at number 12. 12 and 13 are two Tosfosim, which seem to say different things. Tosfos on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that we just saw raises the following question. Are you allowed to give non-kosher food to non-religious Jewish people? There were people back in the day of Tosfos that had converted to Christianity. And they come to you and they say, give me non-kosher meat. But they're Jewish, but they're not observant. Are you allowed as a Jew to give them that meat? So look at what Tosfos says, number 12. Well, if he's there, according to this, after la hoishit lemumarim, you're not allowed to give to an apostate Jew, la avodas kochavim, davar iser, something which is prohibited to eat. Afal pi shehu shalahem, even though it might belong to them, they say, pass me that piece of pork that belongs to me, you're not allowed to pass it to them. Ki adava yadua shiachlu, because you know they're going to eat it. Vuhu ne shalahem ki yisrael goma, and just because they're an apostate doesn't mean they're allowed to eat treif. Okay? And they're a completely Jewish Jew. But, says Tosfos, Umayri, that of course is talking with the Kaiba Mokl Shelo Yochel Ikach, only in the case where they can't take it for themselves. Imlo Yoshilo said, if you don't give it to them, Ukudamati, the Kaiba Trey Ibranara. And it seems to apply exactly this principle that I just said. Which is, if they could get it for themselves, says Tosfos, it's not your problem. It's not your problem. So let's say there's a bread roll on the table. And a person who won't wash or bench on it says, pass me that bread roll. So according to this Tosfos, can you pass on the bread roll?
Yep.
Why? Yeah. Because if you don't pass the bread roll, what will they do? Yeah. They'll just get off the chair and they'll go and they'll say, you're just being difficult, and they'll get it for themselves. Tosfos seems to say very clearly, if you are not the only source of the Aveira, you're mamish off the hook. Not your problem. Comes along another Tosfos, in number 13, and says something very slightly but importantly different. Let's have a look at number 13. Number 13 is dealing with a fascinating case in Hilchos Shabbos. At the beginning of the Gemara in Shabbos, it talks about carrying on Shabbos. And one of the parameters of carrying, if there's no Eruv obviously, is that you have to pick it up in a private domain, transfer it across, and put it down in a public domain. And the Gemara, if you've ever learned that, Gemara goes through all sorts of different permutations and combinations of this one standing inside and this one standing outside and this one takes it from there and this one puts it on there. I'm not going into all of that now. But the Gemara gives a case, which is, let's say somebody's standing inside the house, just holding a glass, a cup of anything, or holding anything. And a person outside the house puts in their hand, picks it up, and takes it out. And you're just standing there, like a lemon, basically. You're standing there, watching this person standing in front of you break Shabbos. But you're not actively doing anything. You're just standing holding the thing. They put their arm in, they pick it up, and they take it out. Are you liable for anything?
No.
Says the gentleman, no, not liable for anything. You just stood there. You didn't carry anything in, out. You just stood there. Tosfos don't like that. Look what he says, number 13. Ve'im toimer v'haka'ava lifnei iver lo titen mirshol. Why is it not lifnei iver? Why is it not lifnei iver? You're standing there, right there, while a Jew, in front of your eyes, breaks Shabbos. You couldn't turn around and say, hey, don't take the cup, it's Shabbos, there's no Erev. Hey, don't take this. How can it say that you're not liable? What happened to lifnei iver? You should be getting involved. Says Tosfos, va'afilu mairi, and even if you come along and say, they could have taken it without you. Meaning Tosfos says, I know that you're about to tell me that, come on, lifnei iver only applies if they can't get it without you. They could have got it without you. The loyav amishal lifnei iver, maybe there's no lifnei iver. Why? The Moshe Kais line the answer, because remember the case of Yayin for the Nazir, Moichil Abba Perikam at the Besechus of Odezor, the Kaya Treyev and the Nara. This is only in a case where they can't get it without you. We know that now. So maybe you'll come along and say there's no problem of lifnei iver because they could do it without your help. Mikol Markham says Tosfos Issa the Rabbanon Miha Ika. There is still a prohibition mid the Rabbanon Shechayev Lahafrisho Mi Issa, because even if lifnei iver doesn't apply, you must intervene. You have an obligation as a Jew to stop other Jews doing aveiros. You have to try and get them away from aveiros. It's not good enough to say, well, technically I'm off the hook because they could have got it without me. Maybe that's true for lifnei iver on a Torah level. But on a rabbinic level, the rabbis came along and said, you must help other people, stop other people from doing aveiros. Now, this Tosfos, if you think about it, it's a bit complicated, but let's just kind of keep the pattern. This Tosfos says something a little bit different to the last one. The last Tosfos we saw from Avodah Zarah seemed to say, yeah, if they can get it without you, not your problem, off the hook, everything's fine. This Tosfos says, no! If they can get it without you, maybe you've technically got yourself out of lifnei iver. But what happens to the general rabbinic obligation, which is maybe an obligation of tochacha? There's an obligation of tochacha to stop other people doing aveiros. Maybe it's a rabbinic level of lifnei iver. Maybe it's another rabbinic mitzvah, but there's some kind of extra level involved there. That was your question, right, about tochacha. Sorry, my voice is getting a bit croaky now. It's fine. I've got three other shirim to give today, so like have rachmanis on them and on me. Okay. So what are we going to pass them? So let's bring it to the Shulchan Aruch and let's work out what to do. So let's just summarize and see where we're up to. Lifnei iver is a mitzvah d'oraita. You're not allowed to facilitate anyone else doing an aveira. We've just established that if they can get the aveira without you, then in principle you're off the hook. But apparently, even if you're off the hook, there may be another level which sometimes applies, we'll have to see when, that you have to actively intervene to stop them from doing the aveira. So look at number 14. Number 14 is dealing with the interesting question of selling items to Christians near to Christmas. Are you allowed to sell them items they're going to use for their Avodah Zarah? And by the way, in Ashkenaz, a lot of the Jews were actually selling crucifixes. It was good business, you know. The Jews, where there's business, they'll get into it. So the question was, are the Jews allowed to be, you know, doing this? By the way, the people outside the, you know, in Italy, outside the Vatican, selling all their stuff, a lot of those people are Jewish families, Italian families. It's well known that they've got the paste, the mokum, they have the masora, they sell the stuff. So let's have a look. Number 14. Dvarim shehem yuchadim lamin. Are you allowed to sell things to idolaters that they're going to use for that particular idolatry? Are you allowed? And he says, no. He says, asur. The Shulchan Aruch says, you are not allowed to sell idolatry artifact items, whatever, to people who are not doing Avodah Zarah. He just says it straight. He doesn't mention whether they could get it without you or not. The Ramah comes along and says, V'yesh Omrim, number 14, second line. when we say that you're not allowed to sell them things for their avodah zarah, haynu davke im ein lahem achirim ki yotzevo. That's only if they don't have their own. Or shelo yuchlu liknot bimakom acher, or they can't get them somewhere else. Aval im yicholim liknot bimakom acher, if they can get them somewhere else, mutalim kol ein kol davar, you can do what you like. The Eplis appears, the Ramon appears to say, like the first Tosfos we saw, if they can get it somewhere else, it's not your problem. Let them get it somewhere else. If they don't want to get it, they want to get it from you, they can get it from you. And then he says, V'yesh machmirim, but there are those who are stricter, who require you to not do that for them. V'nagu l'hakel kefar rishona, but the minhag is to be lenient, like the first opinion. V'kol bal nefesh, but if you want to be machmir, yachmil atma, be machmir. He kind of vacillates between the two. He says, ultimately, you're allowed to sell it to them, but it's advisable to be machmir. Now, why is he vacillating between the two? Why is he flip-flopping and saying, well, maybe yes, maybe no? He's applying these two Tosfos that we saw. The first Tosfos says, if they can get it elsewhere, then you're off the hook. The second Tosfos says, no, you still have an obligation to stop people from doing aveiros. Why? Where does one apply and the other doesn't apply? So I brought you, I'm not going to have the voice or the time to read them all inside, but I brought you number 15 and number 16. Number 15 and number 16 is as follows. Number 15 is a shach. Who is the shach? The shach was commenting in the 1600s in Poland, in the 17th century, and he says the following. He says, I will harmonize the two, and I will tell you how this works. Sometimes you can, as long as they can get it elsewhere, sometimes you're off the hook, but sometimes you're not. What is the distinction? So it says the shach as follows. The shach says as follows. If the Jew is an apostate Jew, or is an, are you turning on heat or cool?
It's too high.
It's too high. I thought it was just me. I'm about to melt into a small heap here. So says the shach as follows. If you're dealing with a non-Jew or an apostate Jew, maybe you don't have any further obligation. But if you're dealing with a religious Jew, like the case in Shabbos, maybe you do have that extra obligation. So he wants to draw that line between dealing with non-Jews or non-religious Jews and with religious Jews. Again, let's work out what that means. The shach seems to be saying that everyone agrees that if they can't get it without you, then you're absolutely obligated to not give it to them, because that's litneiva on a Torah level. The question is, if they can get it without you, if they can get it without you, do you still have this extra obligation to intervene? And he says, it depends. If you're dealing with a non-religious Jew, you don't have any more obligation, because they're not religious, they've opted out. If you're dealing with a religious Jew, then you have the extra obligation. Fine. So the question for us is, how does that relate to non-religious Jews today? Do they fall into the category of the apostate that is being dealt with in Tosfos? And the answer is almost certainly not, because non-religious Jews today are not religious, not because they've apostatized, because they've rejected Torah, but because they are they have not been educated in Torah. And therefore the distinction of the shach may not be so helpful to us in that sense. The Degel Mervava, who is the Noda Yehuda, draws a different distinction. And he says, no, I don't think the distinction is between religious and non-religious, or Jewish and non-Jewish. The question is, are they doing it on purpose, or are they doing it by accident? If someone comes to you and they're doing an Aveira on purpose, then once you're technically off the hook for Litnei Iva, because they can get it without you, then you're off the hook. Why do you care? They're doing it on purpose. They know what they're doing, so they can do it. And you can facilitate it, because they could get it elsewhere. But if they're doing it for shogeg, they don't realize that it's a problem, so then, he says, that's when you have the extra obligation to intervene. So then that raises, again, the question, what's the mazid and what's the shogeg? If a non-religious Jew, let's take this lady who's coming through with her leg of ham, if a non-religious Jew comes through, is she buying that ham on purpose, or is she buying that ham for shogeg, by accident? Now, obviously, it's not by accident. She doesn't think it's kosher, and it's actually not kosher. But on a certain level, is she really doing it on purpose? Maybe she doesn't realize. Maybe she doesn't know. Maybe she doesn't understand. On the one hand, everybody understands that a Jew's not allowed to eat ham.
It's ignorance.
But it's ignorance. It's not quite the same as doing something maybe on purpose, directly on purpose. And therefore, we're still left with a bit of a question, which is, how does this work? We'll have to plug that in next week into working out, you know, the cases that we've got. But in the meantime, let me raise a different angle. Let me give you a different angle, which will hopefully take things out of this. Let me just summarize, and then we'll move on to this last part, and we'll finish. I might finish a few minutes earlier, because I don't think my voice is going to make it for a full 60 minutes. Sorry. Let's just summarize where we are so far. What we've said so far is as follows. We, as Jews, have an obligation of lifnei iver. We're not allowed to facilitate any other Jew or non-Jew doing an aveira. We're not allowed to enable them to do an aveira. If they can get it elsewhere, perhaps easily, perhaps not so easily, then technically we're off the hook for lifnei iver. But there is this next level, this rabbinic level, where we have an obligation to separate people from doing aveiras. When does that apply? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. So different people say different things. Maybe it applies only for religious Jews, or for people doing it by accident. Maybe it applies in those cases. Maybe it doesn't apply for non-religious Jews or people doing things on purpose. That is a different question. But let's look at a different angle. The Shulchan Aruch in number 17 raises the following question. Isha ain't of a mitzvah hakofa. A woman is not obligated in the mitzvah of hakafa. What's hakafa? Cutting off your payas, exactly. A man, as you know, is not allowed to cut off the payas of his head. A woman, if she wants to shave off the payas of her hair, she's allowed to do that. I'm not recommending it, but she's allowed to do that. But yesh omrim, she'af al pishu muteret lahakif payat rosha, even though she can shave off her hair, asura lahakif payat rosha ish, she's not allowed to shave a man's head. If a woman is in a barber, is cutting hair, if a Jewish man comes to sit and have his hair shaved off, she can't do that. Afilu hu katan, even if he's a child. Now, why not? What's the problem? She's not in the mitzvah. That doesn't apply. The mitzvah doesn't even apply to her as a woman at all. She can shave her own hair off. Why can't she shave his hair off? Litzneiva. He's coming in, saying, help me do an aveira. And she's helping him doing aveira. She's shaving his hair off. Now, comes along Rabbi Kiva Eger and raises an interesting question. Look at what he says. He says, let's say he shaved his own hair off. How many aveiras would he be doing by shaving his own hair off? He stands in front of a mirror and shaves his own hair off. How many Torah aveiras is he doing? Two. He's shaving, that's one aveira, and he's the shaver and the shavee. He's being shaved. So he's doing two aveiras. So if he stands in front of the mirror and shaves his hair off, he's doing two aveiras. So now if she shaves his hair off, how many aveiras is he doing? One. So is she harming him or is she helping him? So if she's helping him, how can that be lifnei iver? Because lifnei iver is tripping people up. It's not helping them. And therefore Rabbi Kiva Eger says, ulai, very clever, says, ulai, maybe you could argue that actually this woman should not be obligated in lifnei iver. Because in net terms, even though she's helping him do one aveira, she's actually saving him from doing two aveiras. Yes. In adultery?
Yes.
Yeah, but we're not talking about adultery. Correct.
Isn't there a prohibition of shaving a man's
hair? No. No. A woman is not included in the mitzvah of payas harosh at all. She is included in the mitzvah of adultery. A man's not allowed to commit adultery with a married woman. A woman is married and not allowed to commit adultery. So they're both part of the mitzvah. So Rabbi Kiva Eger raises the following very interesting question. Is that if we look at the situation of Gadol and say, you know something? In net terms, am I harming or am I helping? Maybe you could come up with an argument that there is no lifnei iver at all. So let's plug that into a scenario. I invite someone to come to a Shabbaton where they're going to be inspired and encouraged and as an outreach weekend. But they're going to drive there. So what's better for the person? That they should get in the car and drive to the Shabbaton, or they should sit at home and not drive and watch TV all Shabbos and never come to the Shabbaton? So I think everybody in the room would agree that, like, it's better they should go to the Shabbaton, because who knows what's going to be. So can you apply that kind of logic, or can you not apply that kind of logic? How far can you take this Rabbi Kiva Eger? Let's give you another situation. Let's say, we'll see next week, voice willing, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has the following question. A man came into his yeshiva in Kol Torah, in Beit Vegan, and it was a non-religious person, but supported the yeshiva. And supported
religious learning, etc. And he wouldn't make, he didn't make brachas. So Rav Shlomo Zalman gives him a piece of cake, and he puts it in his mouth without making a bracha. So the boys in the yeshiva, after the guys left, said to Rav Shlomo Zalman, isn't it explicit in the Shulchan Aruch? Putting our food in front of people who won't make brachas is an issur of lifnei evelosif and michshol. So he says, 1 second. If I give him food, and he puts the food in his mouth without making a bracha, so I have helped him to do the aveira of not making a bracha before he eats. But if I don't give him food, I don't give him a glass of water, he sits there for an hour and a half and he walks out hungry and thirsty, and then he walks out saying, what is this? Everywhere you go, they at least give you a glass of water. What's with non, with religious Jews are less hospitable than non-religious Jews. So how much worse is that? Which is worse? That he should eat without making a bracha, or they should go out with a negative attitude towards religious Jews? Now, that's an interesting cheshbon. How do you make that cheshbon? Maybe you have to be a Rav Shlomo Zalman to make it, but this is a question we're going to have. And the last thing I want to just raise is as follows. Another completely different but very interesting related issue is as follows. Number 90. Let's say we conclude that there is lifnei iver. So you can't get away from it, there's lifnei iver. Are you ever allowed to do an aveira to help someone else to do a mitzvah? It's an interesting question. Are you allowed to do an aveira to help someone else to do a mitzvah? Do the ends justify the means?
No.
Fine. So generally the answer is no, because Hashem says don't do aveiras. You can't start justifying it. You know, the famous ein eitzah ve'ein tzvun ve'ein chachal neged Hashem. You can't start justifying away, well, God would want me in this scenario to do this. The answer is awesome. But that's not so straightforward. Have a look at number 19. Misha shalchu loy shehutziyu bitul mibeitzo b'shabbos. Very tragic situation, Shulchan Aruch, based on an actual case that happened in the Rishonim. A little girl was kidnapped on Shabbos by the church and taken away to be brought up in a monastery, in a nunnery. And the father finds out about it on Shabbos, and he has an opportunity. He can get to the officials and bribe the officials and get the girl out. But if he waits till Motzei Shabbos, then it'll be too late, and he'll never see her again, and she'll be brought up as a nun. Now, the girl's life is not in any way endangered. There's no pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh is physical harm. There's no physical harm. You could even argue that she'll probably be physically looked after better if she's brought up by the church and living in the ghetto. But obviously, she's going to be brought up as a Christian. Is he allowed to break Shabbos to get the girl out?
Yes.
Now, you may find it surprising to hear that in the Rishonim there were some opinions that said, no, you can't. It's not pikuach nefesh. Says the Shulchan Aruch, you can. We have to learn it, why they said you can't. But he says you can. Look what he says. Someone who gets a message that his daughter has been kidnapped on Shabbos. He has a mitzvah to get on the road to do everything he can to save her. He can break any mitzvah. He can break anything on Shabbos to get the girl back. And if he says he doesn't want to, Kaifina maybe force him to. He has to get that girl back. So, why? How is he allowed to do that? It's not pikuach nefesh. The only heter to break Shabbos is pikuach nefesh on a Torah level. And it's not pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh is not for neshamas. It's for bodies. It's learned from v'chai v'hem. Yes.
Oh,
that's very interesting. So you're raising an interesting point, which is the reason you're allowed to break Shabbat is not only because of the Chai Bahem, which is a physical thing, but it's also where they learn from the mitzvah of the Shamar of Nezah as a Shabbat. Break one Shabbat, so there'll be a net increase in Shemira Shabbat. So that could be one answer as to why he's allowed to do that.
But it is the
Kuach
Nefesh.
It's not. Nefesh doesn't mean the Shamar. Nefesh means physical. Pikuach nefesh only means saving someone's physical life. It's not about their spiritual life. So the Mishnah Berurah gives a different answer. Look what Mishnah Berurah says, and we'll leave it with there, and we'll pick it up in Yetzer Hashem next week, and we'll plug all this. I'll summarize and we'll pick it up. They took his daughter away. The im came. Okay, sorry. Hitiru loyla sumna derech pamati. They allow him to get on the road. The hatzila to save her. Why? the Kaimalankos, we pasken, im einu posheya, if the person who has been kidnapped is not guilty, is not negligent, they didn't get themselves into it, and here this girl clearly is not in any way negligent, chayev la'asois isura zuta, you're allowed to do a little aveira, kedei shelo yaseh chaveru isura rabba, to stop your friend from doing a big aveira. This is a really dynamite principle. Like, wow, you're allowed to do little aveiras to stop your friend doing a big aveiras. Aval impasha, but if they're guilty, if they're negligent, ein lo lavia b'chalal shabbat avora, then the father can't help her. Now, obviously, in this case, she was not negligent. But think about what this is saying. This may be saying as follows. Let's say I'm about to do litnei iver. But actually, I rationalize that this litnei iver is worth it because of how I'm going to help this person in some way. Is that, are you allowed to use that like a calculation? Or is it just going to get out of hand? Because everyone's going to suddenly start saying, well, you know, it's worth it for me to do this in order to do that. I'll give you an example of where this is applied. In Kiruv, where rabbis give shiurim, they often give shiurim to young women who are not necessarily dressed the way that you would ideally like the people to be dressed in the shiur. And, you know, you may be able to say, please dress appropriately. And very often they do dress more appropriately, but they don't really know what appropriate is yet. So are you allowed to give a shiur in that situation? Because there's an objective prohibition in halacha. You're not allowed to say divrei Torah in front of people who are not dressed properly. Can you invoke this idea and say, you know something, you're right, this is taka a problem. But it's a smaller problem compared to the bigger gain, which is if I don't teach them Torah, then when are they ever going to learn Torah? Or is that not allowed? Meaning people that talk about different heterim when it comes to Kiruv, there's no such thing as a kind of global heter for Kiruv. But when they are involved in kind of working these things out, so they bring in principles like this to try and apply them and see how that works. So let's just summarize, and we'll leave it till next week. Hopefully I'll have more of a voice next week, which is as follows. What have we seen? We've seen any number of scenarios where there is a potential litnei iver question. And the halacha basically works as follows. There is a Torah mitzvah not to facilitate someone else doing an aveira. That's litnei iver lo yitzin michshol. If they can get the aveira without you, then you're off the hook for that Torah mitzvah. But in many scenarios, there is a further rabbinic mitzvah to stop them, maybe tochacha, from doing the aveira. And therefore you have to intervene in order to stop them from doing that. When does that apply? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Depending on maybe what case you're dealing with. Is it religious, not religious, on purpose, not on purpose? We can deal with that next week. And then maybe there are two slightly out-of-the-box suggestions. Number one, if you're actually net helping, maybe it's not litnei iver at all, like the case of the shaver, the shavi. And number two, even if it is litnei iver, can you ever say it's worth it because the net gain is much greater? Or can you not say that? Yes.
A sofer, would you give a receipt? So I sent a shout to Rabbi Wine, gave me three words, find another sofer.
Right.
That was the whole thing.
Find another sofer. Okay, so we'll deal with that case and other cases next week. Be'ezrat Hashem. Okay, we'll leave it for there now. Have a wonderful week. Thank you for coming. Thank you very much.